Text 101. Edward Morgan Forster. Aziz and Mrs. Moore.
He was an athletic little man, daintily put together, but really very strong. Nevertheless, walking fatigued him, as it fatigues everyone in India except the newcomer. There is something hostile in that soil. It either yields and the foot sinks into a depression, or else it is unexpectedly rigid and sharp, pressing stones or crystals against the tread. A series of these little surprises exhausts, and he was wearing pumps, a poor preparation for any country. At the edge of the civil station, he turned into a mosque to rest. He had always liked this mosque. It was gracious, and the arrangement pleased him. The courtyard, entered through a ruined gate, contained an ablution tank of fresh, clear water, which was always in motion, being indeed part of a conduit that supplied the city. The courtyard was paved with broken slabs. The covered part of the mosque was deeper than is usual. Its effect was that of an English parish church whose side has been taken out. Where he sat, he looked into three arcades, whose darkness was illuminated by a small hanging lamp and by the moon. The front, in full moonlight, had the appearance of marble, and the 99 names of God on the frieze stood out black, as the frieze stood out white against the sky. The contrast between this dualism and the contention of shadows within pleased Aziz, and he tried to symbolize the whole into some truth of religion or love. A mosque, by winning his approval, let loose his imagination. The temple of another creed, Hindu, Christian or Greek, would have bored him and failed to awaken his sense of beauty. Here was Islam, his own country, more than a faith, more than a battle cry, more, much more. Islam, an attitude towards life both exquisite and durable, where his body and his thoughts found their home. His seat was the low wall that bounded the courtyard on the left. The ground fell away beneath him towards the city, visible as a blur of trees, and in the stillness he heard many small sounds. On the right, over in the club, the English community contributed an amateur orchestra. Elsewhere, some Hindus were drumming. He knew they were Hindus because the rhythm was uncongenial to him, and others were bewailing a corpse. He knew whose, having certified it in the afternoon. There were owls, the Punjab male, and flowers smelt deliciously in the station master's garden. But the mosque, that alone signified, and he returned to it from the complex appeal of the night and decked it with meanings the builder had never intended. Someday he too would build a mosque, smaller than this, but in perfect taste, so that all who passed by should experience the happiness he felt now. And near it, under a low dome, should be his tomb with a Persian inscription. Alas, without me for thousands of years, the rose will blossom and the spring will bloom, but those who have secretly understood my heart, they will approach and visit the grave where I lie. He had seen the quatrain on the tomb of a Deccan king and regarded it as profound philosophy. He always held pathos to be profound. The secret understanding of the heart. He repeated the phrase with tears in his eyes, and as he did so, one of the pillars of the mosque seemed to quiver. It swayed in the gloom and detached itself. Belief in ghosts ran in his blood, but he sat firm. Another pillar moved, a third, and then an Englishwoman stepped out into the moonlight. Suddenly, he was furiously angry and shouted, "Madam! Madam! Madam!" "Oh, oh," the woman gasped. "Madam, this is a mosque. You have no right here at all. You should have taken off your shoes. This is a holy place for Muslims." "I have taken them off."
"You have?"
"I left them at the entrance." Then I ask your pardon. Still startled, the woman moved out, keeping the ablution tank between them. He called after her. I am truly sorry for speaking. Yes, I was right, was I not? If I remove my shoes, I am allowed. Of course, but so few ladies take the trouble, especially if thinking no one is there to see. That makes no difference. God is here. Madam, please let me go. Oh, can I do you some service now, or at any time? No, thank you. Really, none. Good night. May I know your name? She was now in the shadow of the gateway, so that he could not see her face. But she saw his, and she said with a change of voice, Mrs. Moore. Mrs. Advancing, he found that she was old. A fabric bigger than the mosque fell to pieces, and he did not know whether he was glad or sorry. She was older than Hamidullah Begum, with a red face and white hair. Her voice had deceived him. Mrs. Moore, I am afraid I startled you. I shall tell our community, my friends, about you. That God is here. Very good. Very fine indeed. I think you are newly arrived in India. Yes. How did you know? By the way you address me. No, but can I call you a carriage? I have only come from the club. They are doing a play that I have seen in London, and it was so hot.
What was the name of the play?
Cousin Kate. I think you ought not to walk at night alone, Mrs. Moore. There are bad characters about, and leopards may come across from the Marabar Hills. Snakes also. She exclaimed. She had forgotten the snakes. For example, a six-spot beetle, he continued. You pick it up, it bites, you die. But you walk alone yourself. Oh, I am used to it. Used to snakes? They both laughed. I'm a doctor, he said. Snakes don't dare bite me. They sat down side by side in the entrance and slipped on their evening shoes. Please, may I ask you a question now? Why do you come to India at this time of year, just as the cold weather is ending? I intended to start earlier, but there was an unavoidable delay. It will soon be so unhealthy for you. And why ever do you come to Chandrapur? To visit my son. He is the city magistrate here. Oh, no. Excuse me, that is quite impossible. Our city magistrate's name is Mr. Hislop. I know him intimately. He's my son all the same, she said, smiling. But Mrs. Moore, how can he be? I was married twice. Yes, now I see. And your first husband died. He did, and so did my second husband. Then we are in the same box, he said cryptically. Then is the city magistrate the entire of your family now? No, there are the younger ones, Ralph and Stella, in England. And the gentleman here, is he Ralph and Stella's half-brother? Quite right. Mrs. Moore, this is all extremely strange, because, like yourself, I have also two sons and a daughter. Is not this the same box with a vengeance? What are their names? Not also Ronnie, Ralph and Stella, surely? The suggestion delighted him. No, indeed. How funny it sounds. Their names are quite different and will surprise you. Listen, please. I'm about to tell you my children's names. The first is called Ahmed. The second is called Karim. The third, she is the eldest, Jamila. Three children are enough. Do not you agree with me? I do. They were both silent for a little, thinking of their respective families. She sighed and rose to go. Would you care to see over the Minto Hospital one morning? He inquired. I have nothing else to offer at Chandrapur. Thank you. I have seen it already. Or I should have liked to come with you very much. I suppose the civil surgeon took you. Yes, and Mrs. Callender. His voice altered. Ah, a very charming lady. Possibly, when one knows her better. What? You didn't like her? She was certainly intending to be kind, but I did not find her exactly charming. He burst out with, "She has just taken my tonga without my permission. Do you call that being charming? And Major Callender interrupts me night after night from where I am dining with my friends, and I go at once, breaking up a most pleasant entertainment, and he is not there, and not even a message. Is this charming, pray? But what does it matter? I can do nothing, and he knows it. I am just a subordinate. My time is of no value. The veranda is good enough for an Indian. Yes, yes, let him stand. And Mrs. Callender takes my carriage and cuts me dead." She listened. He was excited partly by his wrongs, but much more by the knowledge that someone sympathised with them. It was this that led him to repeat, exaggerate, contradict. She had proved her sympathy by criticising her fellow countrywoman to him, but even earlier he had known. The flame that not even beauty can nourish was springing up, and though his words were querulous, his heart began to glow secretly. Presently, it burst into speech. "You understand me. You know what I feel. Oh, if others resembled you..." Rather surprised, she replied, "I don't think I understand people very well. I only know whether I like or dislike them." "Then you are an Oriental." She accepted his escort back to the club and said at the gate that she wished she was a member so that she could have asked him in. "Indians are not allowed into the Chandrapur club, even as guests," he said simply. He did not expatiate on his wrongs now, being happy. As he strolled downhill beneath the lovely moon and again saw the lovely mosque, he seemed to own the land as much as anyone owned it. What did it matter if a few flabby Hindus had preceded him there and a few chilly English succeeded?